Welcome to We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. You can get anything you want up there regarding John Deere. You can get tractors, mowers, implements, even parts and service. They do it all. Give them a call. Phone number is 530-226-9226. Or you can get them on the web at papemachinery.com. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. And you can't miss them. Got a big Pape sign there on Twin View with lots of green equipment in the yard. So go up and talk to them.
There you have it. Yeah, but if you're going to mow, don't do anything dumb.
Yeah, you better have rubber blades if you're going to mow.
It's fire time. We don't want to have any more fire in our fire time. All right, so today is July 28th, 2024, just for context, in case we say stuff that, I don't know, when we play it later, it doesn't make sense. I remember we played one from during the Obama presidency in the Trump presidency, and the guest said something about how the president was a dope or whatever, and people went crazy. It's like, oh yeah, but it was a different guy. So the date does matter sometimes. Our guest today, we have two, actually. We have Claire Lopez, and we have Dr. Lyle Rapacki, and we split them up. So we have Claire in the first hour, and we have Lyle in the second hour. Claire sent me a fairly comprehensive list. I said, hey, what do you want to talk about? And it was like, everything in the whole world. The assassination attempt, Gaza, Biden, Harris, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, there's
I'm like, lots. Wait, we're going to do that in an hour? So Claire is the founder and president of Lopez Liberty, LLC, with a mission to alert Americans to national security threats, both international and from the Islamic movement and the Muslim Brotherhood and their Marxist collaborators in this country. She supported former acting ICE director Tom Homan and Tom Trento in Defend the Border, the United West, and was an instructor for John Guandano's Understanding the Threat into Action program and its online National Security Academy. In mid-2023, Lopez offered expertise as National Security Advisor to U.S. presidential candidate Bishop Jackson. She also is also a senior advisory board member and director of U.S. geostrategic security issues for Near East Center and for Strategic Engagement. Served as an advisor and mentor to Special Forces students in the fall of 2020 DOD course. And from 2014 to 2020, she served as VP for Research and Analysis at the Center for Security Policy. She's been doing a lot of stuff. Claire's a busy bee. She I have a huge long bio for her on here, and she's got all sorts of interesting background with the CIA and all sorts of stuff. So Claire's an expert on a lot of stuff. That's why we like having her on. Is she our hostage? Is she our hostage yet? She is. Yay!
I apologize for my scratchy voice.
That's okay. I have one, too.
Under the weather here today.
Oh, sorry to hear that. I sprung my knee, not my voice, so I guess I'll limp and you can sound scratchy.
Oh, he needs a fife.
All right, Bill, you're on fife. So, Claire, you sent me a really long list of possible things we could discuss. So I'm gonna just let you pull the ripcord and start wherever you'd like.
Well, I guess I would start in the Middle East because just yesterday a most horrific rocket attack took place on a soccer field.
Yes.
In a Druze town called Majid al-Shams, a Druze town in the Golan Heights in upper northern Israel. 12 children were blown to bits. Dozens more were injured. Both Secretary of State Antony Blinken and the Israelis as well have identified Hezbollah as the source of that attack, and it looks like there will be repercussions from that.
Do you think there really
there
will?
Have to be.
Yeah, I mean, we always think there have to be, but then
not always, right? Israel usually.
Israel will have repercussions. Do you think we'll provide some repercussions for that?
Well, I mean, the important thing for the United States, I think, is that we, you know, our Secretary of State, our National Security Advisor, and President Biden, to the extent that he's still involved, provide all the assistance, all the military hardware, all of the supplies that Israel needs as fast as it needs and whatever quantities it needs. Because this is a fight for Israel's existence. And indeed, I mean, a fight for Israel's existence is a fight for our own.
Well, Hezbollah is a much more formidable foe than Hamas. I mean, they have a rather large army, don't they?
A very large army, yes, indeed, as well as a very large arsenal of rockets and missiles. A lot of them now fitted out with precision guidance packages sent from Iran that could make them able to reach many places in Israel. So it's a very serious situation. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to sort out what's going on over there, if you were going to decode that for somebody, since we obviously have a lot of people who are easily led, and they think that these guys are under attack, that Israel is the one being the aggressor. Lots of comments to that, but what would you, where would you start with that?
Well, I mean, I guess I would probably start with the Hamas Covenant. That's its foundational document from 1987. And in that document, in the opening lines, it says, Israel exists and will continue to exist until Islam, not Hamas, until Islam obliterates it as it has others before it. Point to that. There's all you need to know about motivation, intent, and you realize that it is not just Hamas, then, that is part of this commitment to the destruction of the Jewish state of Israel, but its sponsor in particular, which is the Islamic Republic of Iran regime in Tehran. And that regime backs, supplies, arms, funds, trains, not just Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad, which is likewise in the Gaza Strip, but also Hezbollah and the Houthis and so many other Islamic jihadi groups across the Middle East. And then you look at history and you realize this has been going on for 1,400 years.
Yeah.
It's not something new. It's not something that just came on our radar, you know, some months ago, which it did, of course, with the horrible October the 7th, 2023 Shabbat massacre, invasion by Hamas of Israel. But this has been going on far longer than that and will continue to go on until they're stopped.
Wow. How do you see this? I mean, is there I don't know. Is there an endpoint that you can see? Like, if you were in charge of, you know, or you were advising, what would you advise them to be doing?
Well, there is a citation from the Quran, which, of course, all Muslims believe is the literal word of God, Allah. And that line says something to the effect of jihad must be fought by Muslims. All Muslims, in one form or another, not always guns and bombs, but maybe speaking, maybe writing, maybe financing, any of the above, unless and until the circumstances become such that it's impossible for them to continue fighting jihad. And then they are obligated to stop it, at least until they then think themselves capable of starting it up again. We need to get them to the point of thinking that jihad is impossible.
Do you think this recent attack is... do you think Hezbollah did this to kind of goad Israel into a response so they can escalate this thing into a bigger conflict?
You know, I'm not sure about that, because up until now, and really since October of last year, it has seemed that the Islamic Republic has been holding Hezbollah back. Yes, they lob rockets and missiles and drones on a regular basis, but it seemed, at least, that they were not crossing some final line of an all-out offensive. Now, neither is this, and maybe they did not realize exactly where that those rockets, there were something like 30 of them, would land. They just, you know, shot them off, and they went where they went. So it may be that it was not intentional, per se, to hit this children's soccer field where the kids were playing soccer. But the regular tempo of attacks by Hezbollah it has not let up since last October. Whether they've now crossed the line, I think they probably have. It's children. It's kids. They were playing soccer on a field, and 12 of them were blown to bits. Children and many others, up to, I thought the number that I saw was 30 others injured. How many may, you know, survive or not survive, we don't know. But it could be that Hezbollah has now crossed a line that even Tehran might not have wanted it to cross at this particular moment. I think that Tehran is holding, has been wanting to hold Hezbollah in reserve for the time when Israel will have to counter Iran's nuclear weapons program. And at that point, that's what Hezbollah is for.
Mm-hmm. Did they, I didn't follow a lot of that. I didn't have a chance to. Did they make an excuse for yesterday? I mean, did they?
No, it's interesting.
Miss their target or, you know, oops?
No,
or?
No. In the beginning, like right after the attack, Hezbollah's statement said that wasn't them. They didn't do it. Well, duh. Of course they did it. So then, you know, they kind of had to backpedal. It's undeniable now that you know, barrage of rockets came from Hezbollah. So I'm not quite sure how they'll spin it. This literally happened yesterday, so we're one day after here now. And there were, oh my goodness, thousands and thousands and thousands of Israelis in the streets for the funerals of these 12 children killed. And I think everybody knows that there has to be a very severe response from Israel. I don't know exactly where it's going to go, but this, I think, very much does cross a line. And there's no denying it was children. The photos are grisly. I don't know if you've seen any of them, but it's just awful.
Well,
so
I think when you launch 30 plus rockets at somebody, your intent had to have been to kill people.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, it was children, and yeah. Maybe that's going to be the catalyst. But I don't think there was any doubt in anybody's mind that they wanted to kill people when they did that.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And they've been regularly shooting off, like I said, rockets, missiles, drones at these northern Virginia, northern Israeli communities. Sometimes in the Golan, sometimes in the Upper Galilee, on the border, just over the border from Lebanon into Israel. That's been going on for a long time. They didn't care. You're right. I mean, they meant to kill people, but they didn't, I think, they didn't realize that this particular barrage would slaughter so many children. I'm not sure that's what they would have done had they intended to do that. I don't think they would have intended to do that, that's what I'm saying. They would have, yes, shot them off at other, you know, villages, other townships and so forth. One of the important things about this, though, is that this village was a Druze village. And they have tried very hard to stay out of this conflict between Hezbollah and Israel. But now they are directly involved. It was their children, their village, Masjid al-Shams. And we're going to have to watch the reaction of the Druze, who do not put up with nonsense. I think this may pull them into this conflict.
Has there been any reaction from the other Islamic states over there?
I have not seen any yet. It could be that I haven't that I've missed it, but I have not seen anything yet, especially not from the Islamic Republic of Iran yet.
Mm-hmm. We have to take a really quick break. When we come back, can we carry this, but move it into some of the Gaza protests on this side?
Yes, let's do that.
Because that's just been crazy. Our guest is Claire Lopez. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Justice will be served and the battle will rage. This big dog will fight when you rattle his cage. And you'll be sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. 'Cause we'll put a boot in your ass. It's the American way. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly. And it's gonna be hell when you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell. And it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down.
It's a treacherous game. I won't be a pawn, a sucker for these lies. But I know when an angel is the devil in disguise.
Yes, it is a treacherous game. I thought I'd play us a little Toby Keith, though, because remember when we used to get angry about stuff like that? I mean, we used to do something about it. We even wrote mean music about it. It's like, huh, remember that? Now we just have a little blurb on, you know, CNN or whatever. It's depressing. So, Claire, what do you think about all this Gaza business here in the States? Uh-oh. Is Claire in the cone of silence?
Wednesday.
There you go.
I'll let you know that this past week, on Wednesday, I was actually downtown in Washington, D.C., on the day that Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu spoke to Congress, and all the crazies were out on the street vowing to citizens arrest Prime Minister Netanyahu. But the vibe was kind of strange. So it definitely was a mix of the red and the green. The red, communist, Marxist groups. The green, Islamic jihadi groups. Although I was also very surprised and taken aback even to see how many Jewish groups were there protesting against Prime Minister Netanyahu, including Jewish conservative Orthodox men in the full black with the black hats and calling for his arrest. That surprised me. Mm-hmm. But during the day, and I was there the entire day long with some buddies, during the entire day long, from what we saw, it was not remarkably violent. It was raucous. There were, you know, lots of chanting. There was lots of chanting going on. Free Palestine, especially. And they had a stage set up in one of the sort of grassy areas downtown there, where they had set up a stage, and different speakers were there. Linda Sarsour and Susan Sarandon and you know, all the usual suspects. And you know, they ranted and raved against Israel and against the prime minister. But it was not until, I would say, and there were scuffles. There absolutely were scuffles on the front lines of some of these groups with where the police lines were. And we, as a matter of fact, saw two or three young men who had been pepper sprayed, and they were really burned. They were not in a happy state of mind. But for the most part, the scuffles were there, like at the point where the protesters met with the police lines. And speaking of the police lines, they did an amazing job Wednesday. They used those metal bicycle racks, you know what I mean, to erect barriers that, first of all, blocked off the entire Capitol building and the Capitol grounds. Nobody could get anywhere near the Capitol building. Very efficient. There were teams, by the way, in to Washington, D.C. from other places. We could see their, you know, their jackets and that from surrounding jurisdictions of Virginia, of Maryland. And also we know that New York City sent a contingent down. So there were lots of police and different, you know, security services, some of them decked out in full riot gear, including even gas masks. But they mostly were very good at channeling and blocking and even corralling these protesters. And they the police, the security services, were moving their barriers through the day as they learned where the crowds might be going next. And they channeled them, they blocked them off. And at one point, we even saw they had totally corralled them. They couldn't move. So, you know, kudos to
that's pretty good.
Only the combined, you know, police security forces, but also to Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, whose responsibility the security of the Capitol grounds building was. And he did a terrific job. Now, at the very end of the day, as a matter of fact, my friends and I were actually on a street corner waiting for an Uber to pick us up because the protesters had pretty much dispersed and gone away. The police forces themselves also had, you know, begun to disperse and go away. And then a bunch of demonstrators surged up to Union Station. Union Station is a great big and very beautiful train station hub in Washington, D.C., not very far from the Capitol building. And in front of the Union Station are flagpoles, and there are American flags, or the middle one's the tallest, I think, and that flew the American flag. I think the others might have flown the flag of the city, and I'm not sure, but the middle one was the flag of the United States. They tore that down. They stomped on it. They burned it on the ground. Of course, that is a felony. That is against U.S. law. And they scuffled with the very few police that I guess were actually left to come to that site. And we saw, you know, cars with the lights flashing and the sirens blaring headed up towards Union Station. But there weren't enough of them compared to the numbers of the protesters there. And it's there that you saw the most graphic photos, I'm sure, videos and photos of the day's events and you know, the burning of that flag and the scuffling with the police. There were arrests made, as I understand it, maybe around 20. They've all been let go, no charges, even though the assaulted police committed a felony with desecrating the United States flag and stomping on it and burning it on the ground. Those are felonies.
Oh, yeah.
They were all just let go.
Wow. Yeah, and that, obviously, January 6th, you know, when you had people, that was, you know, they were trying to take over the government and take over the country and all that. But this kind of stuff is not...
No problem.
Yeah, not the big a deal. What about all the, I guess, you know, having grown up back there, the whole spray painting all the monuments just absolutely pisses me off to no end.
Awful. There at Union Station, there's a plaza in front of Union Station, and that's where the flagpoles are. But there is also a monument there to Christopher Columbus. And it's that monument that you probably saw in the photos from the Union Station being spray-painted and covered with graffiti. Other monuments around downtown also were spray-painted and defaced. By the way, those are also felonies. But,
right.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah, and I'm,
but nobody... Nobody got racked up for a felony on any of that.
No, I'm sure.
Not that
probably
I know of.
Most of them don't even know who Christopher Columbus is.
Well, then there's that. Hey, so, when you're walking around down there, I mean, is it? It seems like it would be, you know, like you wouldn't want to be walking around down there. Did you feel safe?
Well, here's the thing. As I was saying earlier, in the beginning of the day, early in the let's say afternoon, These different groups of protesters, the red and the green, the commie pinkos, the Islamic jihadi types, yes, they were waving those ugly red and black and white flags and chanting, you know, free Palestine, but they were not hostile. It had the vibe. It was very strange to me. It had the vibe of kind of like a hippie gathering, like a Woodstock or something. You had pink and purple hair. You had the nose rings, tattoos all over the place. But then they were actually nice, and they were handing out water bottles to people, like me.
Yeah. That's confusing.
I mean, I wasn't, you know, obviously defending anybody. I was just observing. But they were it was a strange vibe, and of course smoking marijuana might have had something to do with that. There was a lot of weed smoking going on too, so maybe they were a little mellow. It's legal in Washington D.C.
Of course, so that means you should do it, yeah, because that's how that works.
But that did contribute to sort of the vibe, the mood. I don't know.
Wow, that's. That's just sad. So how long did all that stuff, does it start at the, like in the morning, or did they all sleep in and show up at 10?
They were supposed to be gathering at 11 a.m. local time Eastern.
Okay.
And when I was talking about the final actions up by Union Station, that was somewhere around 3:30, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, something like that, if I remember right.
So kind of banker's hours for the desecration of the Capital City.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
Wasn't really sure what the protocol was for that kind of thing. God dang. How did we get here? How many of them were there? I mean, was this just over the place, or did it just look big on the news?
I mean, we walked miles and miles and miles, actually trying to get to some place where we could see something because of the security, the police barriers every place. So many streets blocked off. But the signs, the advertisements that went out online and so forth earlier... talked about there's going to be 10,000 protesters, and we absolutely did see great big coach buses, you know, those big ones that hold 60, 65 people or so. We saw them rolling into town and people coming off the buses.
Wow.
So I don't know how many of those there were or where they came from.
So it was totally organic then?
Yeah,
they all just had the same idea on the same day and suddenly got on a bus together.
No, I mean, the internet was full of this weeks ahead of time.
Okay.
And it looked as though ANSWER, you know, the communist group, anti-war, stop war, whatever the rest of it is.
I didn't know there was such a thing. Okay.
They seem to be the organizers of all the other groups, at least online.
Okay.
It looked like they were the ones that were organizing it.
So what do they think? Do you have any sense of that? Like, what do they think Israel should do? Just let Gaza bomb them and take the place over and just roll over and die?
Yes. And here's the crazy thing about those Jewish, very observant, Orthodox men that we saw. They have the idea. Now, this is unique to them and their group. But their idea is that the Messiah has not come yet, and the Messiah cannot come until the nation state of Israel no longer exists. And at that point, the Messiah will usher in an Israeli state. But he can't come.
So hurry and destroy Israel so we can save it.
It's bizarre. I mean, just bizarre.
Huh.
But others, yes, they want Israel to be gone. I mean, when you chant from the river to the sea,
yeah.
And yes, we ask people, they have no idea which river or which sea. They have no idea the geography at all. It could be the Amazon for all they know.
Right. Wait, it isn't?
What they mean, whether they realize it or not, is that Israel should be gone. And in its place, not a two-state solution, no, but rather no Israel and yet another Arab-Muslim terrorist state.
But then you have the other guys who think if they destroy Israel, that the whole place becomes Israel. Like the Messiah comes and then...
The Jewish Orthodox.
Right. Wow, that's kind of like burning your house down for the insurance, kind of, a little bit.
I do not understand that, but that is what I was told. It was explained to me.
That actually, you know, in a scary way, that actually makes sense. I've never figured out what those groups were after, but that does make sense. So I guess if you...
Not to my way of thinking, but okay.
No, but I mean, that does, in a twisted way, make sense, and it also proves the idea that if you go far enough right, you wind up on the left, and conversely, far enough left, you wind up on the right.
See, so I don't even use
they all
terms
are.
Like right and left anymore. They're useless.
No, but
you
would think that the Hasidic community would be a little less into. I don't know. Wow,
these are their beliefs.
Yeah.
I did not realize this really until a short while ago, when Jewish friends of mine explained it.
Huh. Well, that's enlightening to the point, like, I think we better take a break.
Wow.
And I found some music for the protesters. I thought we should have like an ode to protesters here on this little break, just to, you know, make us less angry. And we'll be back. Our guest is Claire Lopez. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I was a rebel from the day I left school. Grew my hair long and broke all the rules. I'd sit and listen to my records all day, with big ambitions of when I could play. My parents taught me what life was about, so I grew up the type they warned me about. They said my friends were just an unruly mob, and I should get a haircut and get a real job. Get a haircut and get a real job.
Who is it?
You could get a haircut and get a real job.
Yeah.
That'd help.
That'd help it. So, Claire, kind of shifting gears here a little bit, let's talk about Kamala. And what do you think her impact is going to be, or lack of, on the Middle East and foreign relations if she gets anywhere near the White House?
It would be a disaster for Israel, a disaster for the United States. Hopefully, she will not even be the candidate for the Democrat Party, but even were she to become that candidate, I think Donald Trump, especially in any debates that are held, I think he would pretty much clean the floor with her. She has a vision of the Middle East, which is not based in reality. She doesn't know the history, even, you know, some of the things we've just talked about right here today. She doesn't know these things. She is part of, I guess, the group that divides the world into oppressors and oppressed. And in her mind, well, mind in air quotes, the oppressors
heavy on the air.
Are the West, the United States, anybody with pale skin, while the oppressed are anybody else who you know might not be getting what they want in jihad. So she sympathizes with the jihadis. I don't know if she's ever been to Israel. Maybe she has, but of course I've been there multiple times. And number one, Israelis are not fair-skinned. For the most part, they are Semitic people. They've been Semitic people for the last 3,500 years, but she doesn't know that either. Yes, some of those who emigrated, let's say, from Europe, from Eastern Europe, Ukraine, from Russia after World War II, were what's called Ashkenazi Jews, and some of them are lighter-skinned. But that's not how you assess foreign affairs. Dark skin, light skin. That's not an accurate way to conduct foreign affairs. If you're the United States of America, it's bizarre. It's upside down. It's crazy. But it's based, I think, on a profound ignorance of the history of the Jewish people, the history of the Middle East, the history of that whole region, and the history of Islam, which founded, of course, in the 7th century, many, 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 many centuries after the Jewish people had already made their nation state in the Middle East, where Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob settled. That's in the Bible, and where, David and Solomon established a nation state. And this is hundreds and hundreds of years before Christ. But she doesn't know that. And I guess a lot of other people like her in the current Biden administration are likewise clueless. That's all I can conclude. They have no idea.
It's a lot
and
of
what about
going around.
What about Russia and China? Does she know anything about those relationships and what their capacity and their plans and goals are for the United States?
She gets briefing papers from her staff, whatever's left of them. I think there were four left after 4 years out of a beginning total of 41, 42, for something, 40-something people. Oh, there were four left at the end. So she gets her briefing papers from them. And I don't know what their expertise is. I can't say. But that's where she gets, she doesn't do her own homework. She doesn't, she doesn't know from her own studies what the affairs are of the international scene, including Russia and China.
Well, it just seems like they're both kind of really pressing the envelope right now that, now that they know Biden's not going to be at the helm, and I'm just curious if that's going to change or if they think this is going to be their golden opportunity.
Well, I think that when rogue regimes like Putin's, like Xi Jinping's, like Kim Jong-un's, like the Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei's, when they perceive weakness in Washington, D.C., perceive weakness at the head of the United States government, they press ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think these next several months, what is it, five, six, until all the way till January, inauguration day of 2025, I think they are going to be incredibly chaotic, tumultuous, and dangerous because these other rogues see their window closing. They can read polls, too, for whatever the polls are worth, okay, but it does look, like President Donald Trump will be president again. And so they count these months as their last opportunity to do whatever wreak whatever mayhem they want to wreak while things are weak and just unsettled in Washington, D.C.
I mean, the sad part is if we know they're not going to do anything, our adversaries know they're not going to do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's not exactly a big mystery.
That's the assessment that these rogue leaders have made.
I have found it to be... I listen to progressive radio all the time when I'm driving, and the last couple of weeks I drove a lot, and so I was listening to I listened to these guys before Biden bailed out, and then after, and it was just funny. You know, the one week Biden was going to save everybody, he was totally fine. The right wing they were monsters, talking about Biden not being able to do it, blah blah blah. Who else could possibly step in that would be any good? And then suddenly, the next week, Kamala Harris, she's going to save the world. And we've always, I mean, they actually said, we have always wanted her to run, and we're just so grateful. And then one of them brought up the laugh, right? The evil right wing, they make fun of her laugh. And the other lady gasps right on cue and says, I'm just so offended by that. She is so secure in her person that she is sharing her inner joy with all of us. I feel so blessed to be able to share her inner joy.
Oh, my.
And I was like, wow, you know, sarcasm makes me happy. Maybe that's my inner joy. I better share that more. That's my new excuse.
Well, I mean,
I'm just sharing my inner joy. There you go.
But, I think the other part of this that's very important for the campaign to make the point of is... That as vice president, Kamala Harris was part and parcel of the Biden administration.
Oh, all day.
And whatever responsibilities she was handed, including the border, were hers to deal with. And she made, you know, a complete wreck of everything.
Did she ever go to the border? Did we ever figure that out? Did she ever go there? I know she didn't go to Europe, but...
One time, but not right up to the border.
Like a drive-by?
I forget where it was, but somewhere... close by.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, I was in Eagle Pass last summer.
Oh, how was that?
At the time, it was pretty quiet, although we did see those great big white buses transporting the illegals across the bridge that connects Eagle Pass and on the Mexican side, Piedras Negras is what it's called. That bridge, they come across. And, you know, all they have to do is flash their little CBP One app, and they're loaded on the buses, and off they go to wherever they want in the United States. So we saw that, yeah. But we did not see, a lot of people, for instance, fording the river or something like that. We did not see that at that time.
Why go through all that trouble? Right? I mean, why?
Well, if you can just, yeah.
If you can just get on the bus,
the
right?
The cell phones are free. The CBP One app is automatic. And you're in.
Yeah. So with her, well, what do you think, just based on, you know, you've watched this stuff for a long time, do you think she'll actually wind up being the nominee, or do you think there's something else up their sleeve, too?
I really don't know. I mean, she's just such a train wreck. Every time she opens her mouth, excuse me, I don't know how they can go forward with her. Much less allow her to debate Donald Trump. I don't know. Of course, the convention is coming up in a few weeks in August, and we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure he's going to share some inner joy with her. I'm pretty sure it's going to make us all happy.
But, you know, I mean, at the moment, the Trump campaign has said, we're not even going to set a date until we know actually who's the candidate. Which she is not yet, even though she's got all these delegates supposedly in her column, until it's solidified, until it's confirmed that she is the Democrat Party candidate, there's not even going to be a set date for a debate.
God.
Yeah.
You've worked in foreign affairs and politics and all over the world and all these things. Can you... Like, is there a time when it's been this chaotic on this many fronts that you know of?
Not for the United States, no. No. Many other places, sure. But not for the United States. Absolutely rudderless, leaderless, drifting. drifting.
Wow.
And then, of course, there was the Olympics yesterday in Paris.
Yeah, what the heck? I didn't see it, but it was all over, everywhere.
They've taken down the horrific opening ceremony with all those pedophiles and perverts. They've taken it down from YouTube. The Olympic Committee, has taken it down. It was so awful. I mean, they got lambasted all over the world.
Well, I understand a lot of people are boycotting the Olympics over that incident. It was so outlandish and vile. I can't believe they
just unbelievably vile.
They're allowing the men to, you know, compete in the women's sports. I don't see how that's. I mean, how can you be proud of a medal if you beat a woman and you're a man in their sport?
Yeah. Oh, they don't care.
Yeah.
They don't care. It's not about being proud.
Yeah, there is no pride.
The podium,
pride is gone. It's just a slogan in a month.
Yeah.
It's June now.
Yeah. Right.
Unbelievable.
All right. So you had sent me a we'll call it an exhaustive list of potential things that we could chat about. And one of them was the assassination attempt. So we have, like, you know, 3 minutes or whatever.
Oh, geez.
You know, you want to cram that in the last 3 minutes?
Well,
what's your take on that?
I think that is the investigation into that is still ongoing. Obviously, it was a catastrophic level failure of the Secret Service, which no matter how many local police units they might delegate responsibility to for whatever tasks, it's their responsibility in the end to make sure that everything goes right, and they didn't do that.
Yeah. Have you? I mean, I realize we've had presidents, you know, shot and killed, you know, assassinated in the past. But in your time, have you seen? It just seems like all our systems are on, you know, are on fail.
Everything is collapsing. Yes, I agree. We've got to get leadership back in the country. There's just, we can't go on like this.
Mm-hmm. Rudderless executive branch, I don't think people realize, you know, they want Congress to fix it, but at the end of the day, I mean, these agencies are under the executive branch, and when you have a president who's been AWOL for most of the time, some stuff, you know, some of the cheese slips off the crackers.
Well, I mean, it looks like the DEI hired director of the Secret Service, Kimberly Cheadle, who finally did resign, but she was AWOL as well.
Yeah. Wasn't it amazing? She thought she could just tell everybody, nope, that's, you know, we're going to look into it and I'm going to stay. It's like,
no.
Ma'am, you're so not going to stay.
I couldn't. Not after that.
So, who would you pick? Let's do Claire's picks. Okay, so who would you put in a chair first? Like, if you got to be president tomorrow, who would you reach out and grab? Let's assume they all say yes. And who would you assign first?
Well, I mean, I would like to see
or maybe even just what title.
Former director of the CIA, Mike Pompeo, come back. I would like to see a place in law enforcement, whether it's the Secret Service, maybe, for Dan Bongino. National security. I don't know. I mean, they're very excellent candidates, but the whole place needs a cleaning out right now.
Yeah, there needs to be a massive purge, and I really believe there will be. I think if Donald Trump wins this election, which I'm certainly hoping he does, I think he learned his lesson from last time.
Yes, I do too. I think he learned a lot over these last.
It's not a business. Just because you're the boss, they're not going to do what you say. And he needs to put his own people in there and get the job done.
Absolutely.
Sniping to bed. I mean, it's just out of control.
Do you think that would move the needle on the Ukraine Russia thing?
We'll have to see about that. You know, I don't want to see the policies of a Vice President J.D. Vance take the lead in a new administration. I mean, he would just throw Ukraine to the wolves and let Putin do whatever he wanted.
Yeah,
I don't think Trump would do that.
Hmm? I don't think he would either. Holy cow!
Trump wouldn't, but J.D. would.
We are out of time.
Okay.
Absolutely out of time. Claire, you can go deal with your sore throat. We thank you for coming on with us.
Thank you very much.
And we're going to have you back.
Thank you, guys.
Again, as soon as possible.
Our
guest has been Claire Lopez, and our next guest is Dr. Lyle Rapacki. And so I thought we'd throw a little out to the illegal immigration front. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People.
Cross the river if you can't swim the tide.